Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys, whether it's auto, home, life, or business, have served this valley for decades, and they give back. The Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament raised better than $25,000 for the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. And when it comes to your insurance needs, they're the best. They'll find insurance that fits you and you're completely covered. Again, we mentioned auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be. And if there's a claim, oh, they go to work as if it happened to them because the customer comes first. That great commercial we have with Adam Purdy saying that he had a client in Mexico, or excuse me, in Canada, and something happened and called up on a weekend, and Adam took the call right away, quickly made sure everything was set, and said, look, relax, you're all set. That's the kind of insurance agent you want. Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our play-by-play call of the day, the Pirates beat the Cubs at Wrigley.
The pitch, line drive right field. That is going to get down and head to the wall. Two are in. Josh Bell is going to be waved home by Joey Cora. Gregory Polanco still going to third, and he is there with a bases clearing. Trip, trip, triple. And the big hit of the series belongs to Gregory Polanco and gives the Pirates a 5-0 lead in the sixth.
Ended up winning the game 7-1 at Wrigley yesterday. All right, the U.S. Open is this week at Shinnecock Hills. We just heard from Cole Miller. That's the big event this week. Cole, of course, joined us from the practice chipping green at Shinnecock Hills in the previous half hour. The next big event after that will be the NBA draft, which is a week from Thursday. No one covers the draft any better than Jeremy Wu of SI.com and Sports Illustrated. Jeremy, welcome to the show. It is great to have you with us.
Thanks. How you guys doing?
Doing very well today. We'll start with the obvious, and that, of course, is Tony Carr of Penn State. You've taken an interest in what he's doing, obviously. I've seen him rated anywhere from in mock drafts from 39. I think I saw you at one point, you had him 58 or something like that, and then 51 another time. All right, pluses for Tony Carr, and what are a couple of things he's had to overcome?
Yeah, I saw Penn State play probably four or five times this year. They had a lot of games in New York and had the Big Ten tournament. So I'm pretty familiar with Tony's game. I think that, teams like, he can shoot it. He has size. He has some playmaking ability. His numbers were very strong, obviously. There were a lot of games where he, carried Penn State to wins, which I think, in the Big Ten was tough. And so I think it was, probably a good time for him to sort of ride that momentum into the draft. His range is a little bit less firm. I think at the combine, he got hurt. Didn't really have a chance to, drive up his stock, to where, you can feel great about it. But I think he will get drafted. I think some of the concerns are, the athleticism component. He's not extremely explosive,
Right.
He obviously has a feel for the game, but, sort of relies more on his change of pace. And using his size rather than, the typical sort of hyper-athletic guard you see in the NBA. So he needs the right fit. But I think that, he should have enough interest that he'll be picked somewhere in the second round.
In fact, it was interesting you talk about measurements and measurables. Jack Hamm and I were talking last week about a couple of linebackers here. And one of the areas that really is talked about a lot of late in sports is length. Tony's wingspan is that of a 6'8", 6'9", guy. How much does that help his stock that he has length?
It definitely helps. I think, sometimes too much can get made over, length as a measurable when we talk about, basketball players. But I mean, it is factually, you know, you occupy more space. And then when you think about, you know, playing defense, covering ground, you know, it does matter. Every inch, you know, can help. So I think he measured in a little bit shorter height-wise than expected, but I think the 6'8 wingspan, I think, will help on some level, for sure.
I think some he was listed at 6'5", you know, in terms of, I knew he was 6'3", so he measured
right.
in.
He's at like what, more like 6'3", 6'4".
Measured in at what I thought he actually was.
Right,
so,
right.
All right, let's get to the top of the draft. Ayton obviously has worked out for a lot of people. Is he still the consensus number one, even though Luka Doncic says that he is going to stay in the draft?
Yeah, I would be surprised if that goes in the other direction. All the signs are pointing to Ayton being their guy. I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, and for me, he's been the top prospect the entire season, you know, dating back to October on our first set of rankings. You know, I just think 7-footers with his level of athleticism are pretty hard to pass up. And that's sort of how NBA teams think is, you know, what's this guy in a few years? You know, how can we develop him? And I think he has a lot to offer. So Doncic, I think, will end up in the top five. You know, I think Ayton will end up in number one.
Yeah, I know. At the NIT, I talked with Fran Fraschilla, Dick Girardi, and I did for a while. Brought Luka's name up, and he said, "Look, it's like he's been playing AAA basketball over there." Is how he phrased it. What can he bring to the table that can help a team out?
The way I view Doncic in terms of value is sort of like, and this is not like a direct skill set comparison, but I view him sort of in the way that a Lonzo Ball or a Ben Simmons kind of sets the tone for a team where, you know, he's not a traditional lead ball handler, but he sort of sets an unselfish tone. You know, he moves the ball. He's very, very smart. You know, I think you're probably going to read a lot of hyperbole about his basketball IQ, but, you know, it's all true. It's hard to undersell his feel for the game. And, you know, his production at a young age over there is spectacular. So, I know that there are teams where he, you know, breaks their statistical models in terms of, you know, what he's done. So, you know, he's a very real prospect. It always depends on, you know, how teams view the top of the draft, and that tends to be different than sometimes the media conversation. So, I don't know if he'll go number two, but I don't expect him to fall much further than four or five.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I can ask you a lot about college players, obviously. You mentioned being at Madison Square Garden and seeing Tony play. Obviously, you would have had a chance if you wanted to go over the ACC tournament to watch Duke play. You could have gone, you know, there are a variety of places you can go to find talent. How have you been able to keep up on Doncic, for example? Has it been tape? Has it been word of mouth, reputation? How have you been able to keep up on him as opposed to maybe seeing him in person like some other guys?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, technology now, I think, helps in a lot of ways with scouting. Same as with any team, you know, I mean, we have tools like Synergy. You know, you can watch those games whenever you want. You know, they have it on file, you can watch. And, you know, I have streamed, you know, a lot of his EuroLeague games over the years with Madrid, too. So, you know, if you're willing to pay for that stuff or if you have access to it, it's pretty easy to keep track. So, like, even though I think you're right that, you know, a lot of fans may not know as much about him. I just, you know, clearly there's no level of mystery for NBA scouts. You know, he's been, for the last 3 years, very thoroughly evaluated, and, you know, teams are very familiar with him.
All right, Michael Porter. Michael Porter Jr. from Missouri, who did virtually nothing this past season and is still recovering. Is it a roll of the dice for somebody to take him in the top 10, or is he worthy, even with the injuries, of being a top 10 pick?
I think there's a very high chance he goes in the top 10. I don't see him falling out. I think it's more likely that a team would come up and grab him before he fell out of the top 10. I think, you know, from what I've heard, you know, his health has improved. You know, he did work out on Friday for a lot of teams. You know, he had his pro day in Chicago. So, you know, that situation is very interesting. And I think he has a wide range. You know, the Kings are really like him. You know, supposedly the Kings are high on him, and I don't know if they would do it at number two, but I think it's possible maybe they try to trade down to take him. You know, it really depends on how comfortable you feel with the back. And I think he's doing a second workout, I believe, this Friday for teams that are just picking him in the lottery. So, you know, the situation will become clearer. I think teams will get the medicals. I don't think they feel like they have anything to hide in terms of his health. So that's still a situation that has to shake out. But I think it's more likely he goes in the top 10 and maybe back into the top 5 if all goes well for him.
All right, Jeremy, two-part question here for you, and that would be as follows. Who stayed in the draft that surprised you? Who did not go into the draft that surprised you?
Guys who stayed in, I don't know if there were any crazy surprises. A lot of the guys who remained in were expected. I mean, you could look at Jared Vanderbilt from Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
As kind of a guy who's a wild card, who's probably going to be in the second round. There's some talk that he may have a promise from a team in the second round, so at least he has some level of security in terms of a guaranteed contract. But he's someone who, was in a tough spot because of his health. In terms of guys who went into the draft, I mean, Jontay Porter, Michael Porter's brother,
right,
was a guy who would have likely been a first rounder if he had come out, but was also would have been one of like the three or four youngest players in the draft. So, going back for him to work on some stuff and get in better shape, I think, is a fine move. I don't know how much it will change his draft stock, but. So that was someone who I think teams viewed as a first-round candidate. And Tyus Battle from Syracuse, I thought he would come out. I don't know what he'll be able to do to necessarily improve his stock going back. Because a lot of the time, you kind of are what you are once teams have picked you apart. And, sometimes going back, you can't really do too much to change that. Like, you can look at Grayson Allen, for example. After if he had come out after his freshman year when, he led Duke to the title sort of and broke out, I think he probably would have, ended up maybe a little bit higher. Now he's still probably not going in the first round. But it's just funny sort of how the court of opinion sort of fluctuates.
The Miles Bridges, of course, is coming out now from Michigan State. Many thought he would come out last year. Now, it's obviously individual. I understand that. But is he an example to all the freshmen out there that you can't really improve your stock staying another year? And by the way, I don't think he stayed to improve his stock. I think he stayed because he wanted to stay. But is he an example of like you really can't improve your stock by staying?
I think it really varies on a case-by-case basis. I mean, certainly there are some players who, can improve. I do think if you are, a lock first rounder, you kind of are what you are, if that makes sense.
Yep.
The difference for him may end up being, three or four spots. Like, he may, I don't see him falling too. If he falls out of the lottery, it won't be far, right?
Right.
He'll probably go in between 10 and 16, 15. 10 and 15 is probably his range, so. And that's fine. He's still going to get a guaranteed deal. There is a case to be made. There was a guy, Daniel Gafford this year, Arkansas, who would have likely been a top 20 pick who went back. But again, right now, next year's draft is a thinner class. There's always so many moving parts that's hard to say. But as a rule of thumb, if you're a first rounder, it tends to make sense to come out.
Yeah, Williams of Texas A&M probably went up four or five spots in the first round by the way he played this year. And I saw him play against Penn State in the Barclays Center earlier in the year. Anfernee Simons, what is the word on him? Because he didn't play college basketball.
Simons is a tricky one. I think on pure talent, he's probably a first round talent. But I think that teams have some doubts just because he's so young. Whether they would invest a full guaranteed deal on him. I think right now it's looking more likely he goes in the early second round. Where he'll still get a guarantee, but it won't be a first round deal with options. It'll be, of his own structure or whatever. He definitely has upside. I've seen him play a couple times, in high school and, he can score it. He's very, very athletic. He has the type of tools that are, nice to develop, but I think that if you take him, you're committing to, send him to the D League for at least a year. You want to feel confident in your G League staff, to develop him. So there are other factors with that. But I know he's worked out for a lot of teams. I think he'll be a top 40 selection. I don't think he'll fall further than that, but it's looking more like the 30s are his range now.
What opened the door for Kevin Huerter to move up in Chicago? Because it sounds like he had a great combine.
Yeah, Huerter is a guy who had a lot of fans around the league this year, and I think, sometimes, from the media standpoint, we don't always cover guys the way that teams view them, so... he definitely moved up some with the way he played at the combine. He was outstanding. I was there watching, and I liked him at the Big Ten tournament. I've been high on him, but I think that between interviews and playing well, and he was playing with an injured finger. He went around. He obtained a promise from a team in the first round. Talking, it might be Utah, it might be the Lakers. One of those teams. But regardless of that situation, if you're pretty safely a first rounder, I think it makes sense to go. So. He clearly did enough for himself.
Yeah, obviously, I saw a lot of him the last couple of years, and From a Penn State point of view, I was glad to see him choose to go. No, I'm just kidding. Kata Bates-Diop, considered by most everyone the Big Ten Player of the Year. Sounds like he's probably an early second-round pick. What do you think of his game?
Yeah, Kata's an interesting one. You know, I know there are some people who haven't projected in the first round. I think it's possible he goes in the 20s. You know, I think the question that a lot of scouts have is just what is his upside. In terms of, you know, he's already 22, only has that one really productive year under his belt. You know, it was a very impressive season, but if you watch Ohio State, you know, a lot of the touches he was getting were sort of fed to him in ways where he could really, really dominate. And that's credit to their staff and credit to him too. But, you know, I think there's also the question of athleticism with him. You know, he's not particularly explosive. You know, he does have length. Speaking of length, you know, he has a 7'3" wingspan or a 7'2" wingspan.
And, sure does.
You know, he'll have a chance, I think, to succeed as sort of like a small ball power forward. But I think there's some question marks just with the athleticism, if he'll be able to play big enough to make it work. But yeah, I mean, I can see someone taking him, you know, in the 20s. I can see someone taking him in the 30s. He just depends on who likes him.
What about the Duke players? Wendell Carter says they'll show better in the NBA than they did last year. What's your opinion on the Duke players?
Yeah, really, I think all four of those guys, you know, Bagley, Carter, Grayson Allen, and Gary Trent, I think all four of them might, you know, be better pros than they showed at Duke. It was a weird team this year, sort of a weird environment. And again, it's whenever you have so much talent on one team, you know, guys have to sacrifice. I mean, you know, we've seen that over the years at Kentucky. Same deal. You know, a guy like Devin Booker can go 13th overall because
right.
he is coming off the bench and shooting threes. and, you know, teams see things that, you know, people watching the games don't. But, you know, Bagley will be a top five pick. You know, I think it's pretty clear what he can do. Carter, I think, will be able to do more in the NBA as well. He was the one who sort of had to sacrifice the most probably in terms of role, but, you know, teams view him as a very solid player and a pretty safe pick to provide value. That spot and be a long time pro. So there's reasons to feel good about him. You know, we talked about Grayson already a little bit. I think Grayson Allen will, you know, end up in the first round. You know, very athletic, good shooter, does a lot of things pretty well, and sort of fits with sort of the mold for a, you know, a backcourt role player. You know, a great, you know, possible like third guard, complementary player. And Gary Trent is kind of the wild card. I don't know if he'll be a first rounder. I think he's probably more likely to go in the early second. But I also think there's a little bit more to his game that he hasn't shown. He was relegated more to just spot-up shooting at Duke.
One final question, and this will be on a player as well. He went through the process last year. He decided to go back to Michigan. That's Mo Wagner. Probably, obviously, a second-round pick, but what do you think about Wagner's entry into the draft?
Yeah, I think it made sense for him to go. You know, after getting as far as they did, I don't think his stock was going to get any higher. There's probably an outside chance he goes in the very back of the first round. I think, like you said, more likely second. I think second round is where I would draft him. But, you know, anytime you're his size and you can shoot the three, and he's a pretty natural jump shooter, you know, you're going to get looks. And that's a position, you know, even though we talk about, you know, defensive requirements for centers, I think when centers can really shoot and space the floor, you know, the bar is a little bit lower for defense. You know, you can look around the league at players like Mo Spates or Ryan Anderson, the bigs who can shoot who have other issues, but, you know, are able to mask it with offensive impact. And I think that's the best case for Wagner. He goes somewhere that knows how they want to use him, and sort of turns him into kind of a stretch four or five, probably more of a five. So I think there's a place for him, but I also think there's, you know, some reason to wonder what will translate with this game.
All right, not bad for a Northwestern guy. It was pretty good. Jeremy, great respect for your work. Really, really great respect. Thanks so much for the time. Jeremy Wu, SI.com. Great to have you with us on the show today. And brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades. Auto, home, life, business. Go to Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, purdyinsurance.com. Sunbury Motors Studio is where this show resides. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. Great to have you with us on the show today. And Next half hour, we'll open it up at 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. Matt Cotrillo alongside today, making sure that the rudder has us pointed in the right direction. Later in the week, by the way, Tony Knopf, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, is going to join us. He'll be with us on Wednesday. Harry Mays tomorrow. Also, Matt Leon coming up tomorrow. I believe Matt temporarily is the general manager of the Philadelphia 76ers. Somebody had to be.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. As we've said, the Purdy's have served this valley for decades. Auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be. And the customer comes first. They'll find you the right insurance. You're covered. Best price. You're all set. All at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Great to be alongside Matt Cotrillo today. As we mentioned in the opening half hour of the show, if you're wondering, Matt's going to be with us a chunk of this week. And then we'll see how the rest of the week plays out. Sean Carey's mother passed away this morning about 5:30 at the age of 87. Lived a wonderful life, awesome son, and our deepest condolences to our very good friend Sean Carey.
Absolutely. Glad to be here to fill in, obviously not for the right circumstances, but always good to be with you, Steve.
Yeah, same here, Matt. It's great to have you on board. And we've had a lot of fun on today's show. If you missed any of it, check out the Steve Jones Show podcast. Cole Miller joined us today from Shinnecock Hills, from the Chipping Green at Shinnecock Hills, as a matter of fact, because he is participating as one of the 156 players in the 118th U.S. Open. He qualified to get in, the former Nittany Lion. And we thank Cole for joining us. And also Jeremy Wu from SI.com on the NBA draft. Basketball schedule, they released the Cancun matchups today for Penn State. The opening game of the season is going to be Friday, November 9th against North Florida. The Ospreys will be here in town the night before the Wisconsin game. And then on Monday, the 12th of November, it'll be Jacksonville State. That is part of the Cancun tournament. They will be matched up with Wright State on Tuesday, the 20th at 8:30 at night against Wright State. The other half of the bracket, the 6 o'clock game, is going to be SMU against Bradley. Then Penn State will face one or the other on that Wednesday night on Thanksgiving Eve. So that's how that's going to play out. There are still three games on the non-con that have not been announced, but I can tell you they're set. And they are not all bye games. All right? They are not all bye me games. In fact, I think there are four games not announced yet. One, two, three. Yeah, there's four of them not announced yet. I guess I've announced seven of them. Not all of them are like, here, have some cash show up. Nope. That's not. You'll find there's still one very interesting matchup still to come on the Penn State basketball schedule. All right, so we'll get you up to date on that, and when the time comes, we'll obviously go through all of it with you. That time is not now. Sporting News is in town, one of many outlets doing features and interviews on Trace McSorley. And the Sporting News is interviewing me tonight about Trace. Actually, about a half an hour from now, I'm going to be joined. You know, we've had Bill Bender on the show. Bill's going to be is already here. There's going to be a lot about Trace. One of the areas that people talk about is, you know, what kind of vocal leader he is. A lot of people wonder if he is a vocal leader. He has natural leadership ability. And you could see it when he was a freshman that was redshirting. And I made the comment on the show a few times because people were asking when Christian Hackenberg was the starting quarterback, well, what happened? What, you know, tell us about Trace McSorley. What can you tell us about him? And that's the first thing I brought up was his natural leadership ability. That for whatever reason, there are many players that naturally gravitate to him. That's the way he is. And naturally gravitate to him. What I saw from him in the spring was I saw the vocal part in him really come out. Where if he needed to step up and really say something, he stepped up and really said something. And did not mess around with it. And as a quarterback, a year ago, the conversation about him dealt with 50-50 balls. Well, yeah, they were 50-50 balls, but a lot of big completions along the way, too. But last year, I said, what we need to see from him this year, going into the 2017 season, I said, I know he's capable of this, but I said he needs to get his completion percentage. It would be great to see it get to about 65% because I think he's capable of that. Well, he completed just about 67%. Along the way, 67%. And you could see the way he played it out last year. His ability, it's not just his ability to complete at 66, 67% like he did last year, but it was his ability to put a football in a spot where you could get yards after the catch. You can be a 65, 66% completion guy and still have a station-to-station passing game because you're still putting the ball in a spot that doesn't lead to anything else except for that game. You saw Penn State players make big plays because he would put the ball in a spot where they could make a play for another 8, 9, 10 yards. And that, to me, is the mark of the maturity that quarterback that he has. And you could see in the preseason last year by how they wanted to attack that he had that ability to get yards after the catch. And he did that. And you'll see that again this year in him because he understands how to play the game. And remember, this is a guy that always has been underrated in high school. He kept bringing his team to high school championship games where he won 3 out of 4. And beyond that, when he came out, people said, look, he's going to be a safety. He can't play quarterback. He's going to be a safety. Can't be a quarterback. He'll be a safety. Over and over and over again. he committed to Vanderbilt, and he committed to Vanderbilt with James Franklin as a quarterback. Now, this is where not having an early signing period in that particular time really benefited Penn State. Because, remember, James did not take the Penn State job till January. So Trace, like Grant Haley and maybe others, would have signed with Vanderbilt in the early signing period. Fortunately, at that time, there wasn't an early signing period. So when James then took the Penn State job, Trace McSorley said, I'm going to Penn State. And that is where a lot of things changed for Penn State, because he played the style of game James wanted to play. And in his freshman year, where a lot of people had doubts about him, in fact, they had doubts about him going into his sophomore year, when he actually got a chance to play, people had doubts. I mean, I don't, you know, saw him in the second half of the Georgia game, but, you know, how good is he? That's why Jack Ham and I had no doubts, because obviously, look, we have the distinct advantage, and it is a gigantic advantage, of watching practice. Now, practice, obviously, as opposed to having 11 people consumed with hate chasing you, is a little bit different. But he is, you could just tell he knew how to play. That's why I remember the first two series he had in the Georgia game in the Tax Slayer Bowl, I remember saying to Jack, I said, because he didn't do much in the first two series. And I said to Jack, you know, the thing is that this guy's better than that. I said, he's not just a little bit better than that, he's a lot better than that. And Jack says, yeah, I agree with you. I understand. And then all of a sudden, boom, he hit stride, threw a couple touchdown passes, threw one, I think, to Geno Lewis and one to Deshaun Hamilton. And like, well, okay, here we go. And he hasn't looked back since. Once he got his full opportunity to play, you could see that this guy can play, and he can play, as we all know. And not only that, when you watch him run with the football, when you watch him run, he always keeps that head up, still looking to make a pass play downfield. That's what, take the pass to Irvin Charles in the Minnesota game that really turned the game and the season around. He starts to run, and he probably could run for 20 yards on that play easily. And instead he kept his head up and he threw that pass to Irvin Charles over the middle, ended up being an 80-yard touchdown pass that turned the game around, turned the stadium around, got the stadium excited. And it was impressive. Now, let's go to later in the game. Later in the game. Head up looking to make a pass play, but instead, this time, the judgment to say, you know what, the heck with the pass play. This is so wide open. He gained 37 yards on that run, and that helped set up the game-tying field goal by Tyler Davis, where it went to overtime, and Saquon scored the game-winning touchdown from 25 yards out. But he has a special feel for the game. And we've seen that feel for the game from others over the course of time. John Huffnagel had a great feel for the game. Chuck Fusina did. Todd Blackledge. Kerry Collins had a great feel for the game. Michael Robinson had a great feel for the game. Daryl Clark. All a great feel for the game. I mean, Matt McGloin, in a lot of ways, had a great feel for the game. I was talking with Michael Robinson at the Blue-White game, and I said, Mike, how would you like to run this offense? He goes, man, I would not have been a fourth-round pick if I ran this offense. Trace McSorley's interesting. You know, and you're going to get a lot of mumbo-jumbo about Baker Mayfield. I think that has to do with height and so forth. That's fine. You know, they want to talk about that, they can talk about that. But they're different kinds of quarterbacks in a lot of ways. We'll take a break. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The big event this week, of course, is the U.S. Open Golf Championship. Next week, the big event is the NBA Draft. We touched on both of those today. Harry Mays from Philadelphia is going to join us tomorrow. Matt Leon tomorrow as well. We believe Matt is going to be the one making the Sixers selections at the draft. Maybe not. But that's all coming up on tomorrow's show. And then Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, is going to join us on Wednesday's show. So we have plenty going on the show again this week. A lot of fun. And then baseball starts this week for Williamsport and for the Spikes. In fact, the opening game will be at Bowman Field on Friday night. Yes, Nick Dunn from Sunbury is here in State College. In fact, when I'm done tonight, I'm going to go over to Lash Building, do the interview with Sporting News about Trace McSorley, and then from there, I'm going to go over to the ballpark. I'm going to watch the Spikes work out and the first chance to watch Nick work out. So, and he'll be wearing number 29 here with the Spikes.
Exciting stuff for the Sunbury native.
Yeah, but you know what? He's the 153rd player drafted. To be honest with you, Matt, I mean, that tells me when you're drafted that high, you've got an organization that thinks you've got some double A in you. And that to me, when I'm looking at players, that is what I think about when I'm looking at players. I never look at a player, never, and say, I'm going to project that guy into the major leagues. There's just too many twists and turns that can happen along the way. So I look at a player, and when I get a first good read of him, I'll say, you know what, that looks like a double-A player. Remember, I'll give you three players currently in the Red Sox that were with three different organizations, but they're all with the Red Sox now. Brock Holt, Pirates, State College. J.D. Martinez, Astros, Tri-City. Mookie Betts, Lowell, Red Sox. All right? I looked at all three of those guys. And when I saw them, I said, boy, I'll tell you, all three of those guys are going to get the double A. Holt's going to get to Altoona, right? Betts is going to get to Portland, and J.D. Martinez, and I don't know where the double A. Yeah, the double A team is, Frisco is the Rangers, I think. But I said, they'll all get the double A. You could see it. And usually you can get a and that's, you know, that's what I want to, take a good look at Nick. I want to see Nick play, especially for about a week here, where you can just get a feel where a guy just knows what he's doing and you can see it. Like Mookie Betts, when I saw him play, he was a second baseman, right? And you could see, he at that time, he did not have home run power. He had gap power. He has gap power. He can really run, and he gets great anticipation breaking on a ball. You could see that. But I also knew that watching him play second base, that he was going to have to change positions. Why? Because the Red Sox have Dustin Pedroia. So he's not going to stay at second base. So you knew they were going to have to change positions with him. You know, I know Nick can play shortstop, and I think they're going to give him a long look here at second base. That's the kind of the read I'm getting here. But I'm excited to see what he can do here. And after about a week or so, I think I'm going to have a pretty good read as to the kind of upward mobility this guy can have. But again, I never project anybody to the major leagues. That's nonsensical. I think he'd be a major league player. I don't know. Too many things along the way in baseball, when it is such a long journey, can derail you. Suddenly you get hurt inexplicably, you hit a slump, there's a lot of things that can happen to you. And the more you can keep the pot, I'll give you a good example. Rowan Wick hit 14 home runs here in a 3.5 week span in State College. Now, what people don't realize is that he was actually on his last hitting chance with State College. His last. People didn't realize that. We knew it. But that year, the Cardinals wanted to switch him to being a relief pitcher because he has an awesome arm. And they said, look, we'll give you one more chance to hit. Well, he hit 14 home runs here in 3.5 weeks, which is like every time he came to the plate, he's one of the few guys that came to the plate and everybody go, wow. Well, then they shifted him to Peoria, which is the next step up in the Cardinals system. And suddenly he couldn't hit anymore because his problem was he really struggled hitting the curveball. Well, what did they do the next winter? They shifted him to pitcher. And yes, he was with the Cardinals last September as a relief pitcher. Now he's back in AAA right now, again as a relief pitcher. But again, these are the twists and turns that happen in a baseball career. Shohei Ohtani, by the way. They don't know if he needs Tommy John or not, but right now his season's on hold. That's a shame. He's the best story in baseball right now. I know, Matt, you think Cesar Hernandez is, but no.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, he's close.